And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3098. Teresa, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3098 requires Oregon Liquor Control licensees and their employees to check the identification of all people that before selling or serving alcohol to them. It also prohibits a person from purchasing alcohol if they've been convicted of driving under the influence of intoxicants. It also directs the commission to cancel or suspend a license of due to knowingly selling alcohol to a person prohibited from purchasing alcohol.
Thank you. And we have Representative Shields, and I believe he has someone to testify with him.
Yes, Hugh Gray.
Mr. Gray, if you'd like to come up, please go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving us this hearing, particularly late in the session. And we understand that this is just a public hearing, but I thought this would be a good way to start the discussion. The heart of this bill really goes to the fact that for the last, several years, the testimony that I'm hearing in Public Safety Subcommittee, the testimony that I'm hearing in the Transportation and Economic Development Committee is that the state of Oregon has been stuck for several years at about 500 deaths due to drunk driving per year. And we need to think differently about how we get at the root of the problem if we're going to have any more significant declines. And that's what this bill is about. Admittedly, it's a bit revolutionary. In fact, when I heard about the bill from my constituent, Hugh Gray, who you'll hear from shortly, it seemed a little wacky to me. But the more I thought about it, it dawned on me that in this society, we treat driving like a privilege, but we treat drinking like an absolute right. Now, why is it that somebody can have 8 or 9 DUIs and still be allowed to pull up a bar stool at their corner tavern, spend all day there, put themselves in very high-risk situations, and they're going to have to get home somehow? And I grew up in a hard-drinking town where people would drink Boilermakers at 7 in the morning and hang out there sometimes all day. And this wouldn't solve the problem of drunk driving by any means, but I think it would make it a little bit more complicated for somebody to sit down at their favorite tavern. And I think it would make them more inclined, if they were going to indulge their alcoholism, they'd be more inclined to drink at home. It would be a little bit more difficult to sit on that bar stool all day. And so I appreciate you hearing this bill. This would require that the Department of Motor Vehicles put some type of indication on an ID card that somebody has been convicted of one or multiple DUIs, depending on where we draw the bar with this bill, you know, probably next session. And then it would also require people who sell liquor, people who sell alcohol, to card everybody. And it will take the guesswork out of whether or not the person is of the right age or not. And that's part of the reason why last session the United Food and Commercial Workers Local 555 endorsed that bill, because it took the guesswork out of their life, and they often have to pay the price when they end up carding somebody inappropriately or not carding them. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer questions, but I think passing it on to Mr. Gray would be the most appropriate point.
Thank you, Mr. Gray.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, representatives. My name's Hugh Gray. I'm from Portland. I own two businesses there, Big City Produce and Big City Produce Community Market, that we just opened in the Hope 6 project, and at least from the Housing Authority of Portland. I've been in the retail business for 37 years, most of my adult life. I've been in grocery stores checking all day and checking people out with alcohol or without. I've managed grocery stores in California. I've managed a liquor store in California. We won an award for our store in 2004 for Best Sustainable Food System in the city of Portland, which I'm pretty proud of. We don't sell alcohol or cigarettes, and it's not like I'm totally against it. I have an occasional drink myself. But it's personally impacted my family, as well as I think probably everybody in this room at some point or another. I mean, I was hit by a drunk driver and totaled my car in 1972, and the driver got out and the beer cans rolled in the street and nobody did anything. But times have changed, and it's time for things to change again. My wife has been hit twice by drunk drivers, and well, she's from Port Orford and originally from there in the Elk River. She stopped, and drunk drivers just plowed in the back of her, totaled two cars. On a personal level, I lost my son, Michael, in 2004 to a heroin overdose, but he started with alcohol. He was in rehab three times. He's on the street doing all these things, and there's nothing worse than having to identify your son in a body bag. And this is a thing that people have to realize, you know, that this is a real problem. And what really brought this bill to mind, where it came from, is one of my employees and three other young people, they're in their mid-20s, were riding home from Mount Tabor one night. A drunk driver who had over four convictions plowed into these kids on bikes, killed two of them, hospitalized another one, and they missed my employee. And this totally devastated the community of North Portland over there, all these striving young artists and students, and it just was devastating. And one of the parents of Angela Lazenberry presented me with this bill. And I just took and ran with it and then gave it to Chip. I mean, it's just, we're not thinking that this is going to be a cure-all to stop everything, but it's going to stop my other alcoholic son from sitting in a bar all day long and not being home with his kids. You know, and it's just going to be, and from the standpoint of having been working in grocery stores, it takes all the guesswork out of it. I mean, we're not stopping people from going to a bar and staying there and socializing, but we're stopping them from drinking there. And the biggest problems is the people sitting there all day getting tanked, and then they jump in their car and they drive, and they do these things. And, of course, their judgment is bad when they're doing that because they're already in the bag. You know, so that's what, so this is, I think, a much better solution than what we're doing. Plus, the first-time offenders can still hang on to a driver's license, although they're prohibited from buying alcohol, and still get to a job, and still, you know, builds their self-esteem to where they can turn their life around, hopefully. I mean, and you know, and if we save a few of them, then this is worth doing. So that's basically what I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. I think I can freely speak for the entire committee just to express our condolences to your loss. I have a daughter myself. And we are doing several things this year to help prevent and stop people from using driving while they're under the influence of drugs and alcohol, and I'm on several of those bills. And it is innovative ideas. We throw them up on the wall, we see what sticks, and we take things from them, and we try and make it a better community. But once again, I'm really sorry for your loss. Representative Esposito.
Yes, and I applaud you for being here, and especially you, Representative Shields, because you and I have had some pretty lengthy discussions about alcohol use or misuse in the state of Oregon. This, I think, is a good step, but I do want to make it perfectly clear, I think, that this committee should send this thing out with an addendum to it stating that any cost incurred would be borne by the individual that has the problem. Not the state of Oregon, not the public, but the individual that has the alcohol problem. I don't care whether an individual gets drunk in a bar, providing they never drive. I don't have a problem with that. That's up to them. But when they drive, then all of a sudden it's a different case scenario. My mother, this last summer, was driving north on Interstate 5 at 65 miles an hour, was rear-ended by an individual airborne and flipped over.
Oh, my God.
So you can imagine how fast that individual was traveling, and the individual blew a 2-0. That's what I want to stop. And we need more law enforcement, but more importantly, we need also programs like this, and I applaud you.
Thank you. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Shields, so I think one of the things that's remarkable in Oregon is that we get driver's licenses for such a long period of time. So would people be required to turn their license in and get some indicator placed on it after a conviction of the sort that's mentioned in this bill?
I think that, Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I think that would be correct, that would be required through the courts.
And a follow-up, Mr.
Yes,
Chair.
Please.
And Representative Shields, are there any other states that do use a system of marking on driver's licenses like this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I think Hugh has been tracking this across the country a little.
I haven't got the facts on it yet.
Yeah, we're not sure.
Okay.
I think Montana was working on it, but I don't know where they got with it.
Any further questions of these gentlemen? All right. Once again, I appreciate you coming here, and sorry about your loss.
Thank you.
Thank you for hearing this.
My pleasure. Jack Evans and Elizabeth Kushwa, please.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, if you're ready, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler. Elizabeth Kushwaffa, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, Local 555. I was not prepared to comment on this bill, was just asked by Representative Shields to do so. I had a brief conversation with the members of UFCW. We are absolutely for the idea of carding everyone. We've had many bills about this going up and down, and frankly, it takes the onus off of the store clerks, the 22-year-old, you know, working at Fred Meyer trying to put himself through college, doesn't deserve to have a criminal record for inadvertently selling to someone who's underage. We're for absolutely carding everyone. We have serious concerns with Section 2. We oppose Section 2 just because you're talking about having a clerk fill out a form to sign an affidavit, essentially, that this is all okay, with no training. Who would bear the training for that? So essentially right now UFCW is saying neutral on the bill, but we really love Section 1. Thank you.
Jack, go ahead.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, Jack Evans of the Department of Transportation. And ODOT is neutral on this bill, but we have spoken with Representative Shield on it. What it will do in terms of its impact on DMV will be to have DMV issue a statement on a temporary driver's license, as well as an identification card that indicates that this individual who has been convicted of a DUI may not purchase alcohol. And that involves two pieces of identification. One is the temporary identification, which the court issues, which is a piece of paper that you get when you're convicted that gives you a 30-day notice that you're going to have a one-year suspension of your driver's license. And then the ID card that you can apply for that actually has your picture on it, that would have an indication that you would not be able to purchase alcohol by order of the court. And so we're prepared to put that together. There are costs associated with it, some significant computer system modifications to get the information on the identification card. Should this bill move forward, we'll want to work with the sponsors to talk about some things that the bill doesn't address. This deals only with the temporary piece of paper that the court issues. It does not deal with the driver's license or with a hardship permit. And it allows a statement on an identification card, but it does not specify when you take that notice off of that card. So those are some issues that we'd want to work out upon the bill's passage. And because of the competing computer tasks that face ODOT at this time, should this bill go forward, we'd ask that the implementation be effective July 1 of 08 rather than after the first of the year, just to give us the time to get the computer up and running for it.
Thank you. Any questions of these nice people? All right. Thank you very much. It's a public hearing on House Bill 3098. Would anyone else like to testify this bill today? All right. Thanks again, Mr. Gray. I really appreciate you coming all the way down here. Close the hearing on House Bill 3098. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2548.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2548 establishes a system for regulating the installation, alteration, repair, maintenance, and operation of reciprocating conveyors. You have a Dash 2 amendment in front of you which replaces the bill. It allows the Department of Consumer and Business Services to adopt rules to establish a reciprocating conveyor mechanic license and a restricted reciprocating conveyor mechanical license, and directs the Department to adopt fees that do not exceed $100 per year for the initial issuance of a license of a conveyor mechanic license and $50 for the issuance or renewal of a restricted conveyor mechanical license, and there's an emergency clause effective on passage.
I'd like to call Representative Crummell, please. J.L. Wilson and Bill Bryant, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for another hearing and hopeful work session on House Bill 2548. I appreciate it. I'm going to be extremely brief because I want to turn it over to Mr. Bryant. I would just note that he's with Pace Equipment, which is in Wilsonville. They've been there for about 33 years. Bill is one of the head honchos there, and they have worked Bill and JL and some and the, I think anyway, my impression is all the parties concerned have agreed upon the I believe it's the dash two amendments, and if it would be if it would please the committee to go ahead and put those into the bill and move it, that would be terrific. But I want you to hear from these guys.
Go ahead, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Schaffler, for letting us come in and have a few words. Thank you, everybody else, too. My name is Bill Bryant. My wife and I are second-generation owners of a company called Pace Equipment Company in Wilsonville, Oregon. The company was founded in 1974, and we've represented a company called Flow Industries, which is a manufacturer of vertical reciprocating lifts, or known as VRLs here in Oregon, for 30 years. And what we're here to do is hopefully you folks can help us out with some problems that we've had after the passage of the Elevator Mechanic Law in 1999. What the bill has done is it's made it impossible for us to hire people to install this type of equipment. It's important to understand that this equipment is not an elevator. It does not and cannot carry people. And but it does fall underneath the elevator division's jurisdiction. So what the bill does, what the law in 99 requires us to do, is bring hire an employee and put him through a 5-year apprenticeship program before he can install this piece of equipment. There are only we supply maybe 3 to 5 of these pieces of equipment a year, and probably through the entire state there's probably not more than 10 of these things installed a year, which makes it economically impossible in order to hire someone, put them through a 5-year apprenticeship program before they can begin to install this equipment. So the bill that we've got in front of you folks will definitely alleviate some of the issues that we have and we're facing. And just appreciate you taking a look at it. We're here with company that we've represented is a company called Flow Industries. This kind of thing here in Oregon, it's created quite the issue, and it makes friends out of some competitors. And there's some folks back here from another company called AutoQuip Corporation out of Guthrie, Oklahoma. I'd like to introduce Mark McKinley and Lewis Coleman. And Lewis, if you wouldn't mind coming up. Oh, he's right here. Okay. Sorry about that. But Lewis has a couple of just real brief, quick words, and then we'll answer any questions. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Lewis Coleman. I'm with AutoQuip Corporation. I was just identified from Guthrie, Oklahoma, and we're a manufacturer of VRLs and have done so in the past 60 years, produce them all over the United States and internationally. And we're here just to ask questions, support of this bill, and thank you very much for your support of the HB 2548.
Any questions from the committee for these three gentlemen?
Well, let me. I'll check.
JL, have you not finished yet?
No. Okay. Representing Flow Industries on House Bill 2548, we're a manufacturer of these VRLs. And just as a visual, I have included here in the testimony exactly what we're talking about when we talk about a vertical reciprocating lift. The problem in Oregon stems from the fact that Oregon is the only state that considers a VRL to be an actual elevator. And the result of this classification is that in Oregon you need licensed elevator mechanics to install or repair these devices. In all other states, industrial mechanics are used instead of elevator mechanics. And just so you know the scope of this issue, in Oregon there's roughly only 10 to 20 of these products that are they're purchased and installed in a year. As a consequence, it's harder to find labor and folks willing to do this type of work in Oregon. The costs are higher if you don't have an industrial mechanic. In fact, the costs in Oregon run 2.5 to 3 times higher because we don't allow these industrial mechanics to work
work on these, and in fact, the cost of installation sometimes far exceeds the actual cost of the product. So what we've attempted to do with House Bill 2548 is to, in essence, build up a qualified labor pool of people who are equipped and trained to install these VRLs. And we do this by creating a specific mechanical license for VRLs that will be under the jurisdiction of the Building Codes Division. It will stipulate that in order to get this license, you must show 3,000 hours of work experience in training in performing installations of VRLs. It also, as a way to build up a pool of qualified folks, it creates a restricted license, which is, in essence, would be an apprentice-type license. The difference being this is not an apprenticeable trade in Oregon, but it would be an equivalent that would allow folks the opportunity to get training to install and repair these VRLs. We view this as one of the most viable ways to increase the pool of mechanics who are able to do this work in Oregon. And so we ask for your support of the Dash 2 amendments and support of House Bill 2548.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Berger.
Question.
Please go ahead.
Gentlemen, why 3,000 hours? That seems excessive to me. An EMT can get a license with 120 hours of training.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler and Representative Berger, because that's what was negotiated. And in real terms, you're looking at about a year and a half to get that 3,000 hours. But I will say that experience, work performed on VRLs today would count for the 3,000 hours. In other words, 3,000 hours from somebody out of state. For work that is performed out of state or people who are currently installing VRLs would count toward the 3,000 hours. In fact, most of these folks today would qualify under that 3,000 hour threshold. And so there would be ways to get people certified today, even with that threshold.
Thank you. It just seems high to me, Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead, Representative.
I'm done.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. JL, who is doing this work right now? Do you have to bring somebody in to do it, or how does that work?
There's one company who has the manpower to be able to do this work based on previous experience. Other than that, the elevator contractors are doing it because their license covers all, including this type of equipment.
And another question, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
Could you tell me why there's an emergency clause on the bill?
Thank you, Chair Schaffler and Representative Rosenbaum. We clearly did not mean for an emergency clause to be on the bill. In fact, we discussed this with the department. An emergency clause would, in fact, not help because the department needs time to implement the rule. And so we absolutely agree.
So if we follow up, Mr. Chair,
yes, please do.
Your intent possibly then to remove that on the Senate side? Or
correct.
Any further questions of these gentlemen? Representative Holby.
I'm just curious when you mention about the these are retractable conveyors and the VRL installation is not an apprenticeable trade. Have you, has somebody applied to make this an apprenticeable trade? Or because I know some conveyors do fall under apprenticeship programs that I'm aware of. I'm just not familiar with the VRL specifically. So is there been an attempt to include this in apprenticeable trade, and it was, and they've been told that it is, doesn't fall within any trade?
Thank you, Chair Schaffler and Representative Holy. I'll attempt to answer that, and what I believe is because there are so few of these installed in Oregon a year, 10 to 20, that perhaps it's not one of those things that registers as an apprenticeable trade. I was under the impression it was a function of just how few were actually installed.
Any further questions of these gentlemen? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Committee, I was contemplating working this today, but I think I need to talk to a few more people, and I think a few more people that are on this list need to talk to the committee about this bill. I'm not saying we're not going to work it. I'm just saying right now at this time I'm not going to. So I'm going to. Anyone else like to testify to House Bill 2548? Close public hearing on House Bill 2548. I'm going to open public hearing on Hospital 3302. Teresa, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hospital 3302 establishes the task force on the underground economy and declares emergency effective on passage. You, Kristen's actually going to be handing out to you a -1 amendment, which changes the authority of one of the appointments on the task force from the Workers' Compensation Board to the Director of Department of Consumer and Business Services.
Thank you. I'd like to call Representative Clem, Commissioner Gardner, and Lou Savage, please. Representative, whenever you're ready.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Brian Clem, State Representative from here in the Salem area. And I'm not going to take a lot of time to describe the bill other than when I was out going door-to-door and meeting people, a lot of people have concerns about the workforce. And one of the things that I really kept coming back to was the idea that we have a lot of really good employers, and often they compete with people who are not following the same laws they are in the same industry. And many of the things people are frustrated about in this country, about their wages, have to do with wage suppression, whether they think it's from foreign countries, whether they think it's from somebody cheating, somebody who's not here legally. People have concerns in this country about the status of the middle class, basically. So I felt one appropriate response is to get together the folks who... Well, actually, let me back up. I felt an appropriate response was to look at actually implementing the law, having the law that we already have on the books followed more closely by the people. And I was having lunch with the labor commissioner talking about different ideas for legislature, and he said, you know, here's what you ought to do. So I got to give him credit for the title as well, because he said, We could get some of the people together in this state who basically need to make sure the laws are enforced appropriately and really work on it. So we drafted up a bill that would put some of those same people together who I think have the jurisdiction over a lot of the laws that we're talking about, wage and hour and employment, revenue, people not paying taxes when they're supposed to be, and put them on a task force, call it the Task Force on the Underground Economy. One of the things that I really felt was important is that wage suppression seems to be the concern of most people when I talk to them. So I tried to do an amendment, well, actually it's in the bill, that says, you know, let's focus on places where there are wages that are high and the people cheating the system are pulling it down. For some reason, they wrote in there, actually, including but not limited to the construction industry. I have no idea if the construction industry has that or not, but for some reason, LC stuck that in there as an example of where this happens, I guess. So I don't know if that part really is appropriate or not. But the point is, let's get people together to enforce the existing laws, because many of the activities that our constituents are frustrated with are already currently illegal. They're just not able to catch the folks.
Mr. Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And I want to thank Representative Clem for putting this bill in. It really does come out of a number of conversations. You know, there's an awful lot of discussion, and I heard a lot of it this last election cycle as well, about illegal immigration and numbers, you know, numbering anywhere from 70 to 175,000 illegal immigrants in the state of Oregon alone. And there's a lot of discussion about what the state can do about it. There's not a lot that, as a state, we can do about it. But there is a lot we can do about the underground economy, because whether one's legal or illegal, there is a lot of occupations out there, and we run across it through the Bureau anecdotally all the time, about people who are being cash paid. You know, most businesses out there are very honest. They take care of their employees. They pay their workers' compensation. And most of those employees pay their taxes every year, just like every one of us do. But there are those companies out there that do cash pay some people under the table and don't pay workers' compensation, don't pay unemployment insurance. And to me, they're really disadvantaging those honest businesses out there. How can you, as an honest business, compete with someone who's cash paying their employees or a percentage of their employees? By bringing the expertise of the agencies listed in this bill together, we can set up criteria to be able to check various databases that currently exist to be able to see if there are patterns and practices where we can pick out companies that do it. or through tips or other information, be able to conduct investigations and see how much of this is or is not going on, to make sure that we can make an example of those companies that do enter into this, and hopefully through doing so, bring about those that are doing it, and we haven't gotten to yet, scare them straight, if you will, in a manner, because they know there is someone watching, someone, you know, taking the care and caution and going out there and trying to find those that are cash paying. I think we'd straighten up an awful lot of people just by knowing that a group like this existed and was continuing to work toward trying to find people like them. I think that there certainly would be a fiscal to this, but I think any fiscal that it would have would really be repaid by the millions of potential taxpayer dollars that would then come back into the Oregon economy that's currently being lost in that cash-paid underground economy. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Lou Savage with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. I'm actually just here to talk about the Dash 1 amendment. We've spoken with Representative Clem about this. One of the task force members in the bill is a member appointed by the Workers' Compensation Board. And the board itself actually just decides workers' compensation cases as to whether a case would be compensable or not. We suggested to Representative Clem that actually the appointing agency ought to be the Department of Consumer and Business Services. We have a number of divisions that cross over on this issue, including the Workers' Compensation Division, the Insurance Division, Building Codes Division, OSHA. So that's really the only reason for me to be up here to explain why those Dash 1 amendments are on the table. Have any questions?
Any questions? Representative Wolvick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clem, I really like this bill. I think we ought to be moving this bill. As chair of the Consumer Protection Committee and dealing with a lot of the construction claims task force bills, this particular issue also raised its head in my committee, and I've also seen it in my personal life out there in the construction industry as well. This is a huge issue, and I know the state of Oregon has done something state of Washington has done something very similar to this, and they have recovered hundreds of millions of dollars in state revenue by cracking down on this underground economy. And so I think Commissioner Gardner's comment about the payback looking into this and actually enabling our agencies to do something about this issue would really pay the state a big return. And it would bring some fairness back to the marketplace as well. I just want to thank you for bringing this forward, and I hope the chair has time to move this bill onward.
Thank you, Representative Edwards. Oh, excuse me, Representative, please.
Comment I might make, in the computer business, it definitely is something where there are fly-by-night operations that just start up and, you know, go out, and it's one of the number one complaints apparently in the country in terms of consumer complaints. And I follow the law when I do it, and I really don't like having to compete with people who are cheating. I just can't match their price and still follow the law, so I have to just hope that they, you know, go out enough over time in a fashion that they don't take away enough market share to put me in trouble. You know, and usually they do. Usually in about 4 months, they're gone. Sometimes they'll make it a year, and then they're gone. But when you follow the law, you have to do it for the long term. All the expenses you make are for the long term, and you have to wait for these fads to go, but people get hurt in the meantime. And often they aren't. You know, they are cheating.
Representative Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a good bill. I'm a co-sponsor of it. We had a long and lengthy discussion when we heard the Department of Revenue's budget in the Ways and Means General Government Subcommittee, and there was a long line of questioning and a lot of discussion about the tax gap in Oregon, that being what's owed and what's actually collected, and there was a lot of scrutiny of the Department of Revenue's performance measures and as to whether or not they adequately address things like the tax gap. And of course, it just kept going around full circle. The conversation kept getting back to the fact that they really don't have the tools nor do they have the knowledge of what the unpaid taxes are out there by people operating in the underground economy. And they were very, I think there was broad bipartisan support for the idea of getting all the certified smart people together, getting them talking on a task force to address the issue. So I hope we do something with this bill this session.
Mm-hmm. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I think that this is a start, but I do think that the underground economy as we know it constitutes about a 10% loss in revenue in the state of Oregon, if my memory serves me correct. That means it'd be about $1 billion or more per year. Staggering, but true. You take the number of people that are working for cash and they actually pay nothing at all. There's no benefits, there's no money's taken out for anything, and the sad part about it is there's no income tax off of that. So, and I'm on the tax reform, and I believe we estimate about $1 billion a year, which is sizable. The other thing is, we could do, I think, a little better, Commissioner, with enforcement of illegal aliens. We just don't do it. I think we could do substantially better as a state. We just do not do it. So I think it's a good bill. I'm ready to go with it.
Any further questions of these gentlemen?
Illegal aliens, citizens, it's all over the map on this one. And I, as a small business owner who just tears out old driveways and puts in new ones, everybody with a pickup truck and a wheelbarrow is out there lowballing me. I've actually put, and I'm not the highest bid and I'm not the lowest, and I make that very clear to the homeowner. I'm not. But I'm at this residence, I'm at this address, and then I got this part-time job where they can find me at. But I've actually had to go tear work out that some lowballer, and they went to the CCB and they didn't have a license. And the Lord knows who they were hiring, but they were probably hiring their pal from the tavern and paying them cash. Not that there's anything wrong with hiring your pal from the tavern. I ought to be inconsistent here. But so I support this too. Task force means money. Yeah. I need the powers to be to come down and put their blessing on this, Representative. Right. I have no problem with it either. But I'm waiting for that blessing, and then we'll work it out. It sounds like we have consensus up here, and that's what I'm waiting for. So with that, I appreciate your effort. I think you're doing a fine job, all three of you.
My one competitor, for a few years there, I had to keep my price right at $45 an hour on the computer fixing until they finally, I knew something wasn't right, but finally they went under, and I heard about then the stories of people talking about all the fraud and cheating that they felt had happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then I was, and I lost money that for 2 years because I couldn't compete with these guys. I couldn't figure out why.
Impossible. Yeah. And then we ended up paying their health care, too.
I have a question.
Thank you. Excuse me, Representative Smith.
Just for clarification, can you tell me why you need three people added to the Bureau of Labor Industries if this is a task force?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, the three people would be, the task force would be put together in order to find the databases, decide on the factors of who, you know, they're looking at to go out and investigate. The three people would be the three investigators that would be doing the investigations and going out and actually doing the work to see that to find the evidence, the additional evidence needed to see that they are or are not being cash paid.
Okay, I just thought it was unusual that we did a task force and we initiate proceedings before the recommendations. So
well,
that was my concern.
Representative, and I appreciate your concerns, and it has money involved, and before we move anything out, I want to make sure that's
okay.
What
thank
the
you.
Powers
thank
you that be are going to do.
Right. And Mr. Chair, I think that's why we kind of worded it, consider a recommendation that they do it, because we weren't, I mean, it kind of depends on what the task force says, and that's one of the things they should consider.
Okay. All right. Okay. Anything else? Thank you, gentlemen. Would anyone else like to testify on Hospital 3302? All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on Hospital 3302. And these next two folks
All we're doing is moving them to another committee. Vote your conscience. We're not taking testimony. Open work session, House Bill 2454. Teresa?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2454 exempts claimant files and employer records from the State Accidents Insurance Fund Corporation from mandatory disclosure under public records law, as well as sensitive business records and financial or commercial information which are not customarily provided to business competitors.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion, please. Representative Rosenbaum?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2454 be forwarded to the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules without recommendation.
Representative Rosenbaum moves House Bill 2454 be referred to the Committee on Elections and Ethics and Rules without recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would just say this bill will have a lot of company.
Yes, ma'am. I'm confident it'll be in good hands, too. All right, then.
Three of us here.
All right. Very good. No discussion. Kristen, please.
Aye.
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 Close the work session, House Bill 2454. Open a work session on House Bill 2715.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2715 requires employers to participate in the Federal Employment Eligibility Verification Program and requires employers to terminate the employment of an employee upon receiving notice that the employee is not confirmed to be eligible to work in the United States.
Thank you. I want to get on the record. I know the speaker is working on a package. This may or may not be part of that package, but I just wanted to get that on the record because I know the proponents of this bill, and I'm a sponsor, a co-sponsor. We're taking a real good look at doing something along the lines of immigration. I want to get that on the record. Is there any further discussion on this bill? All right. I guess I need a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith.
I'll move House Bill 2715 to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Smith moves House Bill 2715 be referred to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules.
Without recommendation.
Without recommendation. Is there any discussion? Thank you. Kristen?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye. All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2715. I'm just going to go right down the line. I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2473.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2473 requires a limited energy contractor to notify the Department of Consumer and Business Services the identity of an employee designated as the signing supervising electrician. We first heard this bill on February 26th. You have in front of you a -1 amendment which replaces the bill. You do have bullet points in your staff measure summary of what the amendment entails. It's essentially a combination of components of House Bill 2473 and House Bill 2474, which we heard on February 26th. But to highlight the amendment, it reduces the required apprenticeship time for a limited journeyman signed electrician or a limited journeyman stage electrician license applicant from 4 years to 2 years, and a Class A limited energy technician from 4 to 3 years. And it also removes the following licenses that are issued by DCBS, the Class 1 or Class 2 oil module electrician's license, limited journeyman industrial electrician, limited journeyman railroad electrician, and limited journeyman signed service electrician.
Thank you, Teresa. Angela Dokes and Catherine Vanetta, please. Angela, whenever you're ready, please. Thank you.
Senator Schaffler, members of the committee, thanks for bringing this bill back. We, as Teresa outlined, it is gut and stuff, so the original bill we are not pushing forward with. She pretty much took the words right out of my mouth, so in the interest of time, I will not repeat them.
Thank you. I appreciate that greatly. Believe me. Yes, ma'am.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, Catherine Vanetta, Governmental Affairs Manager of the Northwest Pulp and Paper Association. Our concern with this bill is very specific, and that is that any practices that are currently done on our mill sites under any license would not change, in that other people, that we would not have to go outside of the people who already work at our facilities to have that work done, and or have them get new requirements to do new licensure to get that work done.
Are you satisfied that this language doesn't make you do that?
At this point, I am not sure about page 5, line 1. Mm-hmm. And but I am also not willing to hold up the work of the committee for that either.
And I appreciate that. We have heard from millwrights and some people in the Carpenters Union, some other areas,
And they've told me that they are satisfied with this, and I'm going to be hope that's right. And I want you to follow it diligently as it moves along, because I intend to work this out here today, assuming you have votes. Representative Escobar.
I admit my lack of knowledge here. What's a Class 1, Class 2 oil module electrician license? What is that? Is that an oiler?
Mr. Chair.
I mean, what is
it? Representative Escobar. To be honest, I can't answer that question either, but what I can tell you is that no one currently holds that license. What we're doing is we're trying to clean up some of the unused licenses that are contained in building codes today. I think there's some folks from the agency, if you really would like to know details. I don't know the answer to that.
Too much information.
I believe it went the way of the blacksmith.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's kind of a good way to explain it. Any further questions of these nice ladies? All right. Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to testify to House Bill 2473 today? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2473. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2473. Representative Escobar.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I would move that we adopt the Dash 1 amendments as an appendage to 2473.
Representative Escobar moves we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2473. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? All right, so moved. Representative Escobar.
It looks like a finger, you know.
Yeah, it's on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's quite all right.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move 2473 as amendment to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves House Bill 2473 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Can I get Kristen, please?
Aye.
Yeah, aye.
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 Aye. Do I have a volunteer to carry it?
I'll do it.
Thank you, Representative Escobar. Very good. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2473, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2475.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2475 provides that the Electrical and Elevator Board has the exclusive authority over the use of a written request by a licensing supervising electrician as the authority to energize electrical installation. We also heard this bill initially on February 26th. You have in front of you a Dash 1 amendment that clarifies that the Department of Consumer and Business Services, in consultation with the Electrical and Elevator Board, can adopt rules to carry out the measure's provisions.
And we have our talented friend, Angie Dilks, again.
I'll see if I can get both bills done in 10 minutes or less. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you again. Angie Dilks for the record, representing the National Electrical Contractors Association. The Dash 1 amendment makes this work a little bit better than our original draft, so we would respectfully request that you adopt it if you decide to move forward with this. Our intention with this bill is that statute today prohibits those who sell electricity from energizing electrical installations that have not been inspected. We've run into a problem where in some instances the utilities don't always realize that the contractors that they're working with are not following the statute, and the board currently doesn't have the authority to write rules around this problem. And so the bill simply says to the board, you know, if you choose to do so, you have the authority to adopt some rules. I talked with some of my folks as to what those rules might look like, and we ran it by a couple of the utility folks in the building, and they seem to be okay with it. I don't think they're signed up today. So that's what the bill does, and we request your support.
Thank you. Representative Escobar.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question, Andy. You're saying that we hook electricity up to installations that haven't been inspected?
Is that what you're saying? Well, there's, if you look at the bill, let me find it here. It outlines when you are not allowed, it says you're not allowed to energize an electrical installation unless the installation is first approved by an inspector, except for these following instances. And one of them is a letter that can be used to say that the proper steps have been followed. In some instances, the contractors that are signing the letters, as I understand it, are not actually doing what they say they are doing on those letters. So we are trying to give the board some authority.
Well, it has an explanation here in the brief summary, too, about if someone in a rural home's power, for some reason, is knocked out, that the electrician go out and re-energize their house before the inspector gets there, if I were living out of country, I'd want to be wired up again before the inspector, rather than wait for the inspector to get there. That's what I think we're getting at here. Am I correct? Mr. Long, why don't you come on up here?
I'm going to say, there's an expert behind me, and I fully admit I am not one.
And shed some light on this.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Mark Long, an administrator of state building codes. And really what we're talking about is exactly what the chair mentioned. There are times where service is damaged, windstorm, windstorm, some other type of storm, and the electrician goes out, a signing supervisor, which is the highest level of electrician we have here in Oregon, goes out, gets the power reconnected, allows that homeowner to operate their home, and that's without inspection. Then a follow-up inspection occurs days later, and what the electrician does is provide a letter to the utility, a letter to the local jurisdiction indicating this work occurred so it can be followed up on. What this bill does is allows us to address this uniformly because, I think as Angie indicated, with some utility areas they understand that this letter is required and only a signing supervisor can do it, and they make sure that that occurs, and in some areas it's not happening, and what we'll be able to do is work with the electrical board to make sure it's done uniformly across the state. There's also temporary power situations where you do for construction sites where this is used. So it's emergency cases and temporary power cases in construction. And basically this is going to allow us to make the practice uniform across the state with the different utilities.
And just for the record, we're only authorizing journeyman electricians to do this.
Higher than journeymen.
Yeah, okay, supervisors.
Yes, that's good. Even a step above.
Yeah, watch them supervisors, though, sometimes.
Okay, I don't know.
Any other questions of these fine folks? Representative Holby.
Well, I'm just having trouble envisioning a signing supervisor being above a journeyman. But anyway, I'll let that go.
Oh, boy. But do they have to tie off? That's okay. All right, we're going to...
Mr. Chair, that'll be...
I'm out of order.
Thank you.
You're over the line.
All right, thank you very much. Would anyone else like to testify House Bill 2475 today? Seeing no one, I'm going to... Oh, excuse me. Bill, come on up. Pardon me. Come on up, Bill. No, it's quite all right, sir.
Thank you. Bill Fluting for the record, Carpenters Industrial Council. A good question, Vice Chair. We run into this temporarily problems in the industry also, and when we lose a motor control center or something to that effect, or a switchgear, we have to call the power company. I am a licensed supervisor.
Great.
And we have to call the power company to turn the power off at the pole to where we know it's isolated. He signs off. I sign on to repair our switchgear, which is your main disconnect. Or if it blows up a whole motor control center, or in case of a fire, then I sign off on the ability to rewire temporarily or permanently in the plant. And then when my part's done, I call the power company. They come out. They don't inspect inside. They just turn the power back on. They sign off on it. I go in and then I make sure all my end is correct. And then I sign off. And that's the way it works.
There we go. Any further questions? Thank you, Bill. I really do appreciate that.
Thank you.
Don't beat me up over the supervisor, Joe.
No.
All right. Very good. Would anyone else like to testify at House Bill 2475? All right. Seeing no one, I'm going to close a public hearing on House Bill 2475. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2475 and entertain a motion.
We have a dash. One.
And Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the dash one amendment to 2475.
Representative Holby moves that we adopt the dash one amendment to House Bill 2475. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Good. Representative?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2475 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Holby moves House Bill 2475 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Very good. Kristen, please.
Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Representative
Edwards.
Aye.
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 Aye. Excuse me.
Aye.
Aye. Would anyone like to volunteer to carry this? Oh, would you call Representative Smith's name again?
Representative Smith. Voting on that.
Aye.
Thank you, everybody. Good bill. Should pass. Would you like to carry it, Representative Smith? No. Would anyone like to volunteer to carry this bill? Representative Berger, thank you.
I'll be happy to carry it if Mr. Schatz is very clear that I understood explanation is put in writing to help me.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2475. And I'm going to open a public hearing, House Bill 2476.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2476 requires a public body to confirm that the person contracting perform building trade work for the public body is properly licensed and prohibits a non-compliant public body from recovering certain damages from the contractor. You have in front of you two amendments. The dash one amendment clarifies that the contracting person must show proof they are properly licensed and removes the requirement for the public body to verify that the contractor's employees or subcontractors are properly licensed. And the dash two amendment clarifies that the public body must verify the licensure and appropriate bonding of the contractor and any disclosed first-tier subcontractor before work can commence. It also allows the Department of Consumer and Business Services to impose a civil penalty not exceeding $25,000 for failing to verify the licensure and appropriate bonding.
Thank you, Teresa. I'd like to call Paul Phillips and Willie Tiffany, please. Whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Paul Phillips, representing the National Electrical Contractors Association. We are here in February. Doug Algest from Kaiser Electric testified with me and members of the committee. The idea was if you're going to get a public job, that you should have the licenses that are required, and they should check that before they sign it, and we gave some examples. The committee chair asked us to get together with a work group. Thus, Willie is here. We met with LOC, AOC, Eugene, Portland, some stakeholders from BCD to make sure that the language actually works the way we want it to do. And what we have here before you is the Dash 2 amendments. The Dash 1 amendments were brought forth by ODOT, and they're now supporting the Dash 2 amendments. I think I'm safe in saying that. Yes, I'm safe in saying that. And essentially what we did is that if you're the prime contractor or first-tier subcontractors, those are all we're worried about. We're not worried about all the employees that would come onto the job at a later date because you have no idea when you bid those who that would be. That's a battle for a future date. And there was a question raised about the penalty clause, so we created a penalty clause that's actually workable. Now, with all that said, Mr. Chair and committee members, I think we have broad consensus. There are still some issues as to whether person is the right word, and we've made a commitment to work with Mark Landauer, Bill Long, Willie, everybody that worked with us so well in the House side, that if indeed there are issues, we'll fix those on the Senate side on the definition of whether person is the right word or contractor is the right word and whatever other issues might rise at this time. But I believe we achieved the goal, Mr. Chair, of getting consensus on these Dash 2 amendments, and I'd appreciate you adopting those and moving them forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Willie Tiffany with the League of Oregon Cities here on behalf of public contractors to merely keep Paul honest, and I'm happy to report my job is now finished, so I support the Dash 2 amendments and urge the committee to pass.
That'll keep your belly full, right? any questions of these fine gentlemen?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Edwards.
Could you rattle off again who is in the work group really quickly?
LOC, AOC, City of Eugene, ODOT, Bill Cross, I briefed. He wasn't actually at the meeting. Special districts were there. I forgot to mention them. I talked to BCD afterwards and ran a building codes division, Mark Long, and his staff. And I'm not sure who else. Representative Edwards, Mr. Chair.
That's a rather exhaustive list. If you get all them to agree, God bless you. Any further questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Would anyone else like to testify to House Bill 2476 today? I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2476 and work session on House Bill 2476, and I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith.
I'll move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2476.
Representative Smith moves the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2476. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Do we need the Dash 1?
No.
Okay. All right. Very good. Representative, would you like to make a motion?
I would. I would move House Bill 2476 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Smith moves House Bill 2476 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Very good. Kristen, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Would anyone like to volunteer to carry this bill?
Daddy, go for it.
Pardon me?
I didn't hear anything.
I was trying to volunteer Representative
Smith. I think Representative Edwards.
Representative Edwards, yeah. I think you should carry this good bill.
Yeah, he did.
Very good. Thank you, sir. It's very generous.
You're welcome.
I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2476. And, oh, he's here.
Yeah, he's here.
Oh, good. That's quite all right. Thank you. All right, very good. Well, then we'll carry on. I'm going to open a work session on...
Do you want to put the chairs up to you? You can carry them over.
Well, I'm just going to open a public hearing briefly and ask Tom to come forward, Mr. Gallagher to come forward on House Bill 2712.
Oh.
And Mr. Gallagher, I haven't talked to the powers that be about establishing a task force because that implies money. I understand you generously offered to staff the task force. I just need to go talk to them, get that all squared away before we do that.
Okay.
And I just want to get on the record saying that. So is there anything else you need to add today on that issue right now?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right, very good. Then I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2712, and I'll open up a work session on House Bill 2713.
Mr. Chair, Committee Members, House Bill 2713 authorizes utility easements for private utility infrastructure and prohibits placement of public or private utility easements within 1 foot of a survey monument on a subdivision or partition plat, and also modifies the definition of partition land to divide land that creates no more than 3 parcels of land within a calendar year.
Would anyone like Mr. Gallagher to come forth and describe any more, give any further description?
And Mr. Chair, I should also indicate there was a dash one amendment that was distributed to the committee on March 28th.
Okay.
So,
Tom, why don't you go ahead and fill us in on what we're doing here again, please.
Mr. Chairman.
And I hope your wife is okay, everything's okay. I hope I'm not out of line asking you, I know.
No, Mr. Chair, thank you very much. She had her 2 wrist bones sawed in half and rebuilt on Monday. So,
God bless her. We're all thinking of her.
Yeah, it's a painful operation.
Yeah. Okay, well, good.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 2713 is part of our continuing tweaks and pulls to Section 92, which is actually dealt with in the other bill, where we're going to try and get all the parties together and go through this at one point in time and straighten it out. This particular bill has only 2 little changes in it, and one of them is on page 3 of the bill, which talks about a utility easement being put at the corner of a lot, and the amendment we had allows that square footage for people to come in and dig up the right-of-way and the easement inside of the property. What happens to us as surveyors is the monuments get knocked down, pulled out, taken away, and then when Representative Escobar's real estate people come in to try to figure out what the lot is, they have to pay extra money to have somebody go out and resurvey it and put the monuments back in. So this helps us, especially on new development, saying that you accommodate the monument and still allow people to run a straight line easement, a straight line for all the utility easements through the property. And as you recall at the hearing, the people who had some original objections to the bill thought that the amendments made that work very well. And that's basically all that's in that bill.
And the dash one? Just changes a couple
words.
Yes,
we did. Yes.
Yeah, the dash ones. Then, I don't happen to have them in this copy, but the dash one.
Actually, Mr. Chair, Sarah Myers did explain the amendment at the first hearing, so yes. There was no opposition I know of to it.
What the dash ones do is the whole stretch of the width of the easement, so they can get in there with a backhoe. It accommodates the way they get into the easement and put the marker, so it's not the one corner piece.
And I know these markers are like gold when you're trying to figure out where your property line is, so they're very important. Any questions, Mr. Gallagher?
Especially when you put up a fence.
Oh, my God in heaven. There's a person up in Happy Valley right up the street from me, and he purchased his house from people that lived there for decades, and they put an asphalt driveway along the side of their property, which they thought was their property, so their neighbor could get back into their lot, which is buying their house. For 50 years, they've been doing this. It's not their property. Mm. It's incredible the mess this can cause. So, with that happy note, if there's no further questions of Mr. Gallagher, we're going to let him go, and I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2713. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2713. Now, Representative Escobar.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to 2713.
Representative Escobar moves Dash 1 amendment into House Bill 2713. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So moved. Representative?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move 2713 as amendment to the House floor. The due pass recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves House Bill 2713 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Very good. Kristen, please.
Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
Excuse.
Vice Chair Escobar.
Aye.
Vice Chair Holmey.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Judge Alford. Aye. Would anyone like to volunteer to carry this?
Jesus, it's my bill.
Representative Smith, thank you very much.
Good
bill should pass.
Thank you. Anything for I'm going to close the work session. House Bill 2713. Is there anything for the good of the order?
Mr. Chair,
we're meeting in the morning.
Yes, that's correct. We're going to be meeting at 8:30 tomorrow morning here in Hiram-D. And also to let you know, sometime tomorrow, hopefully tomorrow morning during court session, we'll be distributing to your offices all of the remaining staff measure summaries and amendments for the bills for Friday and next Monday for you to look over and review.
And I just want to thank you all for coming prepared, and just keep that up, because we're going to have fairly lengthy agendas. But if we're all prepared and know what we're doing.
Mr. Chair, do you anticipate how long tomorrow morning's meeting is going to last?
We have three bills. I don't anticipate. I don't think it's going to be lengthy. It won't be, run into four session. I doubt that would happen. But.
And will we have any canine witnesses?
We are going to have one work dog, one service dog. Lori Sapersteel's daughter. She trains these animals for the first part of the training. And she's here. My daughter walked around the Capitol with her one day. And she was here. They're about the same age, and she's coming. But I believe the chief clerk had some issues with just average canines coming in and being on our carpet. Okay, if nothing else, we're adjourned.